So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review.
Sting accepted an invitation to a party at the White Castle of Fear in the Rocky Mountains.
Stinger! We have a date with destiny. Come to the White Castle.
Welcome to Review Away. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting, and on today's program, we are going to chat the White Castle of Fear. Mm-hmm. Wei, you did one of the ballsiest moves I've ever seen anybody try. You saved the entire viewing of this show, with the exception of one match, for this morning. I was convinced we weren't doing a show today. There was no way you're getting through this whole event in one sitting, and here you are.
Well, I mean, it's no. You gotta think of it like somebody who actually watched this live. You know, 3 hours.
I guess you got the live experience, kind of.
Pretty much, except for one match, which was omitted from our playlist.
Oh, was there? What match was that?
The Chris Benoit match.
Oh, I watched that.
Oh, you did?
Oh, was that not on the playlist?
No.
Oh, well, I can quickly summarize that.
Okay.
I watched the entire thing, Wei. The entire thing.
You did. I watched the 24/7 version, so I don't know if they is that something they cut out or what.
Now, when you say 24/7, you mean, I'm sure, the WWE On Demand service, not a special countdown show.
No.
Filling up Vader and Sting, because I did see the countdown for it.
You did?
Oh.
Wow, you watched everything.
Did you see the White Castle of Fear segment?
I saw the vignette, yes. I saw the fan-edited version.
Yeah, that was shitty. I found a cleaned-up one that I posted on the thread.
Okay, okay.
It's great.
Oh, yeah. The fan one is weird.
Yeah.
The fan one is about, like, homosexual sex, basically.
Yeah, I didn't understand where the guy was going.
Yeah.
I want to alert everyone to the fact that today I'm drinking water.
Wow.
Water.
Do you feel any different?
A little bit. I'm starting to wean myself off of coffee.
Did you have any coffee today?
I had one. I'm limiting myself to one a day.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty.
I'm starting to get some negative effects from coffee, I think. I find, of late, I've been getting like these headaches, and it's just...
How much do you usually drink?
Like two a day, like two large coffees a day, I would say.
Okay.
So I'm just trying to limit to one. I don't think I should necessarily totally kill it off, because last Wednesday I came to work and I didn't have a coffee, and we had to do our preview show, and I thought the show sucked, and I really blamed my lack of energy for it.
I believe that. Yeah. I feel that way about these podcasts a lot of the time. I feel like I do a better job when I'm on high on caffeine.
Yeah, well, today you're drinking orange juice.
Yeah.
Which I actually brought some orange juice with me to work as well today.
Okay. Well, yeah, just sugar. Yeah. Some sugar.
Oasis
brand orange juice.
Yes.
Yeah, from Concentrate, I believe.
What got you through this? Did you have any coffee this morning to get you through Super Brawl 3?
No, I did not. I mean,
oh,
I try not
Christ.
To drink coffee unless
Ever.
I really have to.
Yeah.
It gives me indigestion.
Oh, I don't have that issue. But I just find, I'm finding I'm craving it less. It's okay. More just become a, well, why am I getting a coffee? Because I just am used to it and I don't really need it.
Well, that's nice that you're evaluating your life choices like that.
Yeah, I figure why not.
Okay.
So
maybe this will be the worst podcast of all time.
It could be, and if that's the case, please let me know, and we can blame the H2O and the orange juice.
Yeah.
And then me and Wei can just start, I don't know, doing drugs before these kind of shows. Guaranteed, if you and I were high, we couldn't have come up with anything as good as White Castle of Fear.
No, you know what? I'm kind of let down after seeing that vignette.
I know, me too.
the vignette doesn't really
represent the event too well. No. There's no crossover. There was no even mention of this vignette. This like $80,000 vignette they shot in the mountains, a helicopter.
Now, who's responsible for this whole run of very expensive vignettes that they used to shoot?
Well, this was a very interesting time period in WCW because going into this event, the head of wrestling operations for the company was Bill Watts, who had promoted Mid-South for years, and then he was brought back here to oversee WCW, and he was let go just before this event. There was a big power shakeup, and with Watts out of power, so was Jim Ross, who was supposed to call this show. He was ousted and eventually resigned because they were taking him off TV, and a month and a half later, he would show up at WrestleMania in the WWF. Watts was out, and it was like the week going into this, they put in Ole Anderson to oversee the wrestling operations, but they were also creating a new executive producer role, which they had not filled yet. And one of the candidates who would eventually get the job was Eric Bischoff. So this was very much a transitional period. Wow. And the company, the talent, was very happy because Bill Watts was not a very popular man, and he did a very, to say the least, controversial interview with the Pro Wrestling Torch that had surfaced here, being very open about the fact that if I want to run a business, then I should be allowed to discriminate against whoever I want to discriminate. It's my business. And he talked about the fact, you know, if I don't want to serve a fag, then I'm not going to serve a fag.
Wow.
And this was also at the same time when Marge Schott, who was involved in the Cincinnati Reds organization, had made similar comments and had basically been banned from baseball. And here we are within the TBS organization with this guy saying these public comments, and that was pretty much what did him in.
Was there like were there actual cases of discrimination in WCW?
Well, there was that case that came out years later that Sonny Ono and a number of others filed suit against and actually got a pretty lofty settlement, but there was no lawsuit that came out of any of this time period.
Okay. Wow.
So it was a big transition period here in WCW, and of course, this was the return. This show featured the return of Ric Flair after leaving the World Wrestling Federation for his year-and-a-half stint there.
Mm-hmm. What were the circumstances behind there are a number of people who, I guess, made their debuts on this show, too. I mean, Flair being one, and also the British Bulldog.
Yes, Davey Boy Smith was let go by the WWF in late 92. This event took place February of 1993, so you have a historical context. And Bulldog was released along with the Ultimate Warrior. Of course, the drug testing was heavy into effect, playing off of last week's topic, at this time in late 92. And Davey Boy Smith and Ultimate Warrior were involved in this case where essentially they were discovered to be using like human growth hormone and potentially dealing, and they basically had to release two of their big baby faces at the time. If you remember, that was right after the Wembley Stadium show. Warrior was kind of one of your top baby faces as well. Let them both go. So that was a clear sign they were pretty serious about this drug testing and having a clean roster. So WCW was like, yes, let's grab them. And clearly Davey Boy Smith looking oh so clean on this show.
Yeah.
My goodness, just protruding from the veins. And then Ric Flair, basically, he was out of kind of that main event mix in the WWF, realized where his spot was going to be, and asked for his release. Vince said, if you ever had wanted to leave, we would let you leave, and that's what they did. But there was this big red tape in terms of getting all the paperwork done to get him released that WCW actually didn't get to promote him on television appearing on this show. It was just rumors and stuff like that,
right,
because they didn't want to promote someone that was under contract somewhere else. So,
oh, wow.
Surprise, so
no
he's back.
Yeah, no promotion.
They didn't really get to promote it on their TV because they didn't have the clearance by the time the tapings were happening and getting the go-ahead.
I see.
So there you go.
Fascinating.
So we're going to dive in here into Super Brawl 3. I don't know how many times I'm going to apologize, Wade, because this, as I was watching this, I immediately was like, oh, what am I putting Wade through? This is a long three-hour pay-per-view.
It's a very slow show. As John sips his water.
Just getting ready here to get into our big classic event from Asheville, North Carolina, featuring Tony Schiavone and Jesse Ventura. What an odd couple these two are. I can say not a fan of these two handling commentary. Jesse Ventura was at one time one of my favorite commentators, but I got to say his WCW run didn't. When people argue about Jesse Ventura being one of the great announcers, never does his WCW time come up as an argument in favor of that declaration.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think they were terrible, but they just didn't really seem to have that chemistry, and maybe they're a little too loose with each other.
Yeah, a little awkward. Eric Bischoff and Missy Hyatt opened up the show, and they welcome out Johnny B. Badd, and together these three would serve as like our hosts for Super Brawl.
Yeah, and not only that, but analysts almost. Like Bischoff would throw to Johnny B. Badd and Missy Hyatt for their analysis.
Is that really what Johnny B. Badd provided? Because it was more like, give us some cute catchphrase to end the segment, and that's all Johnny B. Badd did here.
Pretty much, I mean.
It's a good day to be a bad man.
Yeah. What an interesting character. I mean, a gimmick based around him looking like a famous celebrity.
Yeah.
That was really it.
And then eventually it would be a boxer in the WWF.
Somehow.
The Wild Man. Would leave.
Mm-hmm.
That was about it. And they run down the card, and then they throw over to Shimani and Ventura, and they plug the matches, including the White Castle of Fear, which is basically a leather strap match where you have to touch all four corners that we have seen many a time over the years. White Castle of Fear sounds very interesting on paper. I want to hear more. And then when you hear it, it's like, oh, it's a scrap match.
I don't know why they called it this White Castle of Fear. Come on.
I think later in the show we need to watch some of this vignette so you can see the whole thing.
Okay.
You need to have your unbiased view of the clean version of the White Castle of Fear. We'll do that before the main event. Then there was an injury to Ron Simmons, who had recently had, I believe it was shoulder surgery, and they thought he'd be back in time. Was not. So Max Payne was going to get the United States title shot against Dustin Rhodes. The future Man Mountain Rock would be on this show. So exciting turn of events.
Oh, huge.
The injury bug hitting the WCW roster. Need those late-minute replacements. Then they ask everyone to stand for Max Payne's rendition of the Star Spangled Banner, which he played an instrumental version of on his electric guitar, and everyone stood up.
Yeah, it was played nicely.
The heel playing the Star Spangled Banner.
I definitely found that
respectfully.
Odd. Yeah, I kind of found that odd. I think, I guess they wouldn't have him mess it up or anything, but they just had a guy who was able to play guitar. I guess he was originally scheduled for this and not the match, but
this was his gig for the night, was doing the Star Spangled Banner.
I'm sure that's what else would you have him do? Actually wrestle?
He could have been another analyst with Bischoff and Missy Hyatt and Johnny B. Badd.
He just wears a Max Payne, just wearing this ridiculous wig. I guess it was not a wig, it was his real hair, but it looked terrible.
Yeah, Max Payne, for those out there, you know, kind of a footnote in wrestling history, but I always remember his appearance on The Law. It was like a decade ago, and he did an interview talking about how during a road trip overseas for the WWF, he brought a camcorder, and he shot all this footage, and he put out a trailer, actually, of this. And this was an infamous story in wrestling at the time, was this, like, expose on wrestling. Like, there was literally a drug deal shown in this trailer involving Kevin Nash.
Yeah.
This trailer did not lead to the release of a documentary, and Max Payne, much like Tom Zenk, going into this weird cave of, like, guys that, like, Jeff Merrick found, brought them to this bit of a prominence on the internet and radio, and then you never heard from them again. They had their brief time of doing all these interviews, and then silence. We've never heard from these men again.
Yeah, I imagine the WWF put a stop to that almost immediately.
How does that work? It's like, you cannot talk ever again. Like, it's one thing to say, we don't want you talking about this subject. But, like, Tom Zenk is just like a ghost.
Right.
Do you know how hard I've tried to find that guy?
Well, he's just not that relevant anymore. What would you like to talk to him about?
I would just like to find this guy. I mean, he was like, he had like a year where he was like the internet sensation when it came to doing wrestling interviews, and nothing. Disappeared.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm surprised, though, that documentary never really made the rounds. I mean, you hear about all these sex tapes that just somehow get leaked, and you just figure somebody somewhere would have a copy of this Max Payne documentary.
Yeah, send it to Gawker.
Sure.
if you can leave up Hogan's sex tape, there's no way they could get a drug deal on camera pulled.
Yeah, come on.
I think it's time everyone sees that documentary. Anyway, we go to our first matchup. It is the Hollywood Blondes, Steve Austin and Flying Brian Pillman, against a young Eric Watts, the son of Bill Watts, who, spoiler alert, with his dad recently canned, was not in good standing, taking on Marcus Alexander Bagwell. And they came out to the American Males theme.
Yeah, but without Scotty Riggs.
No, that was a few years to come. Shivani.
I love that theme song.
American Males.
Yeah.
Such a great song.
All the WC, a lot of, like, even that Johnny B. Badd song is awesome.
Shivani, at one point, like, describes a hold.
Arm drag, and notice how on that arm drag, he lost control of Pillman, but quickly went back to the wrist lock. I said he quickly went back to the wrist lock. You can talk at any time, you know.
Hey, you're the play-by-play man. Call the action.
It was just like this awkwardness. Like, these two were just not getting along. I was like, wow, what am I in store for the next 3 hours?
Right, right. It was almost like they were too, maybe having too much fun. You know what I mean? Like, being too loose with each other, not being, like, professional broadcasters. Some of that, I think, is fun. It, like, you know, they're joking around.
This is like Kevin Nash on Thunder, his final night as Booker.
You sent me that link, John, this week, and wow. What a performance that was.
It's a gem. If you can go on YouTube, just write Kevin Nash last night on Thunder.
Somebody basically made a compilation of all of Kevin Nash's lines during that last night, his last night as Booker on Thunder.
As Mike Tenay tries to call a straight broadcast, he's got this goof, Kevin Nash, being an idiot for 2 hours.
You see that video, and then like sometimes you hear in interviews these days, Nash kind of be a little, repentive. Is that a word?
Remorseful.
Remorseful about certain things he did in WCW, but then you see something like this, and how could you have any sympathy?
Anyway, match continues here. Babyface has got control of Austin and Pillman, both Bagwell and Watts sharing some shitty drop kicks.
Jesus, like, the crowd boos the shit out of Eric Watts.
No, they didn't.
Yeah, they did.
They were wooing, as Shivani said. He's like, no, those aren't boos. They're saying woo.
Jesse actually at one point asked about these boos, and Shivani, you mean, no, they're wooing.
There's a great spot where Eric Watts applied a abdominal stretch to Steve Austin and Jesse Ventura. Wow, he's going to this very early. That dreaded abdominal stretch.
Eric Watts was definitely like going through like a John Cena syndrome, where
or Garrett Bischoff.
Oh, no.
Son of the Booker.
Yeah, that too.
And was going to get natural resentment.
Yeah, especially that. But, I found that the women were cheering Eric Watts. He's a good-looking guy, but I think the guys knew the real story, that clear case of nepotism going on.
Watts applied a Boston Crab onto Austin, who got out. They got the heat on Watts and grabbed the legs of Pillman into an STF, but then Pillman got to the ropes and was selling his knee when Watts went for an Irish whip. Pillman then missed Watts coming off the apron and jumps into a barricade, and then a double elbow. That sends Watts over the top to the floor, and they continue to beat down on Watts. And then Ventura stating that...
1, 2, he would have had him! Would have had him with a 3 count, but the referee was diverted by stunning Steve Austin.
But this is not a game of woulda, Shivani. It's a game of coulda.
Isn't that the same thing?
Austin cuts off Watts, hits a back suplex, and Ventura continued on this would've, could've ordeal. Some terrible commentary here. Anyway, Watts finally makes the hot tag to Bagwell. All four fighting in the ring. Bagwell hits a fisherman suplex, but Austin comes off the top with an elbow drop behind the referee's back. Pillman gets on top, pins Bagwell. 16 minutes and 35 seconds these four went. Pillman and Austin, you could see here, this was kind of the infancy of their tag team, which would not last too long. But here in early 93, I mean, these two, you could see really gelling.
They were awesome. And you know what? I thought even Buff Bagwell and Eric Watts were pretty good. You know? I thought all four guys were quite, I don't know, pretty good.
Yeah, this is a good opener. Yeah. I thought it was fine. Yeah, even better on mute. They go back to the host, Bischoff, Johnny B. Badd, and Bischoff confirms the rumors that Ric Flair is here tonight and throws to Missy Hyatt, who is outside of a limousine, and security is stopping her as a female then pats her down.
Female cop.
A female cop.
Yeah.
I guess we didn't want to make anything suggestive here and have a male caressing Missy Hyatt on camera. And Sensational Sherry got out of the limo. Sherry. It wouldn't have been Sherry, would
this
it?
This was just one of Ric Flair's women.
Oh, okay. It looked a lot like Sherry, but you're right. She would have been the WWF at this time.
No, it wasn't Sherry.
All right. Flair gets out, and there's chance of We Want Flair, and his security personnel escorted him into the ring, into the backstage area with their earpieces, and it's quite the ordeal. Then we go to the lost match for Way. Too Cold Scorpio against Chris Benoit. And Ventura is asked, who do you favor in this match? And he says that, you know, he has to lean towards Chris Benoit, who just has more of a killer instinct.
No.
And Schiavone says he picks Scorpio and refers to Stu Hart's basement as the Chamber of Horrors. That's where he graduated from. And there's a reverse cross off the top by Scorpio, and then a spin kick sends Benoit to the floor, and Ventura just continued to call Scorpio the cold man. Look at the cold man! Too Cold Scorpio. And Scorpio worked on the left arm, hit a Japanese arm drag that sent Benoit to the floor. They did a great sequence with a test of strength, and then Benoit ducked a spin kick, hit a clothesline. As the crowd started to boo Benoit, he went for a suplex, dropped Scorpio on the top rope. Then we saw a top rope back suplex by Benoit that Benoit was selling as well. And then Scorpio hit a spinning splash off the top for a two count, and Benoit dropped some front first after a victory roll attempt. And then they announced that there's a minute left in the 20-minute time limit, and it comes down to a roll-up that Scorpio hits at 19 minutes and 59 seconds. However, I was timing this actually 18 minutes and 21 seconds, but let's not let the facts get in the way of a dramatic finish with 1 second to spare.
Yeah.
So Too Cold Scorpio getting the win with a second to go.
How was the match?
It was a good match.
Yeah.
It was a very good match.
I didn't know Benoit was in WCW at this time.
Yeah, he was doing some sporadic appearances in the early 90s.
Before going back to New Japan.
Yes. Bischoff then shows Dustin Rhodes on the WCW hotline and brings out Max Payne with his guitar. Norma Jean, he calls this guitar.
Yeah.
And they discuss the shoulder injury to Ron Simmons and Payne getting the title shot. And he says he has a song to dedicate for Dustin Rhodes, and it is the theme from Taps.
What? Taps?
Taps, you know, like the what they'll play on like Veterans Day or Remembrance
That's
Day.
What the song's called.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Taps.
Yeah. So he basically cut a promo with his guitar here.
Yeah.
There's at one point, this was just a weird promo, because at one point he's kind of doing this, like, possessed gimmick, where he's, like, in the middle, he's like, Mother? And he looks up in the sky. And then he just goes, he starts playing guitar in the middle of this promo.
A possessed musician.
Yeah. I thought it was such a strange gimmick. I mean, a guitarist.
The evil guitarist.
The evil guitarist.
Next up, we had the WCW debut of Davey Boy Smith against Wild Bill Irwin. They announced that Irwin also returning to WCW.
What is this guy's gimmick?
Bill Irwin. This guy, part of a world-class championship wrestling in the 80s.
Yeah, what's his gimmick?
He's a cowboy. A ranch hand.
Okay, and that makes him wild. He's a wild ranch hand?
Well, he's not conservative. He's out there. He's wild.
Okay, all right.
They did a crisscross spot where Irwin gets clotheslined to the floor, and then Jesse starts talking about Bulldog's Rastafarian hair.
Mm-hmm. He keeps going on. He went on forever about this.
Like, Ventura had nothing to talk about.
Ventura is just like, if Bill Irwin was smart, he'd use those cornrows as a rope to choke his opponent with. And he would say this, like, throughout the entire match, like it's a legitimate thing.
Ventura was clearly trying to just fuck with Schiavone at points, because Schiavone describes Irish whip by Davey Boy, and Ventura says, why is it called an Irish whip? And Schiavone, without skipping a beat, says, because it was invented in a match in Ireland in 1863. And then Ventura says, I like how you're prepared. You know, you could lose your job here if you're not prepared. Clearly a dig at Jim Ross.
No.
Who, the two of those, Ventura and Ross, weren't exactly the best of pals in WCW. Very funny here. And then Bulldog hits a running power slam. 5 minutes and 49 seconds. Not a very inspiring win. Didn't feel like a lot of... It's like this guy wasn't even the big star debuting on this show once you have Ric Flair coming back. He didn't feel anything special here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this was supposed to be a showcase match for Davey Boy, yet, you know, even though he did put in all the spots, it really was not that exciting or impressive of a match.
So from there, we had Johnny B. Badd with Missy Hyatt. Excited about Bulldog, and Badd says that he's mingling in England, or he's looking forward to mingling in England for this upcoming tour they have of the UK. And Missy Hyatt says that no one told her about this upcoming European tour, so she hasn't got a passport to go on the tour.
Great. Nice.
Then Bischoff is in the back doing double duty. He interviews Paul Orndorff, who just starts doing a crazy, angry, yelling promo, where Cactus Jack then shows up with a shovel, and the bell rings as Jack chases him down the aisle for the start of their Falls Count Anywhere match.
Cool way to start, just to interrupt a backstage promo with a shovel.
Yes. And there's a body slam to Orndorff on the cement, and then a running elbow on the floor. Jack climbs to the second turnbuckle, and then goes for a sunset flip in mid-air, landing back first on the cement on the floor. Jeez. This was one of the most horrendous bumps I have ever seen someone take. And my God, Mick Foley was doing this in 1993.
And this wasn't even...
This got no pop. This was just like nothing. And this looked so goddamn painful.
Yeah, I mean, just knowing the state of Foley's mobility right now, it kind of makes these small spots that much harder to watch. But at the time, it really is what made him get noticed. And it did make the match better. But at what price, I guess?
I once did a somersault off a stage.
Yeah, and there's a video of that on YouTube.
Yes, and this particular one, where I landed badly, the next
day...
Why
did you do that?
It used to be my thing I would do, where I could come off... I could do a somersault, and if you roll, there's zero pain. Like, you don't feel anything.
What do you mean your thing that you used to...
Listen, everyone's stupid in their early 20s.
I didn't have a thing. I didn't have a special move.
Yeah, you did. You would chop people.
No, that's your move, too.
Well, whatever. Nonetheless... This was at a much less height than when Mick Foley was coming off of. And believe me, the next day after I took one of these somersaults, I could barely walk. Like, I could barely walk to work the next day.
This was like a club night that you did this at.
Yeah. Alcohol may or may not have been involved. And I went to the doctor later that day and explained that I was hanging a painting in my apartment, and the stool gave out, and I fell onto my back. And he was concerned that I could have damaged my kidneys. And
from the way you described that, yeah. But if you told him actually what had happened, I don't know if that'd be a concern.
Well, it turned out I was okay, and I didn't do any kidney damage. But that's what I thought of watching this bump from Cactus Jack. Like, it's painful what some of these guys will do just to get over at this point, and... Man, this was just a horrendous-looking bump. I put this up with any of Mick Foley's bumps in terms of...
No.
Yes.
It was not that bad. This was not falling off the Hell in a Cell.
Oh, dude, the thud he made?
Yeah, it was bad. It was...
I think he knocked the back of his head on there. This is on cement.
Yeah.
Oh, do it on the mat. It would have been the same reaction. And it pained me that no one even, like, really reacted to this. This is just another spot early in the match.
Yeah.
Oh, poor Mick Foley. Jack then got thrown into the barricade as they fought up the aisle, fought by the entrance. Orndorff starts attacking the knee of Jack that they cited was a... We all know that Jack has bad knees.
Yeah, never mind his back.
Jesus Christ, this is 20 years ago.
Well, like, just never mind everything else that he's you know...
Think of what this guy would do over the course of the next decade after this match. And he takes the right knee brace off. So in 93, Jack was wearing a knee brace. And suplexes Jack over the top rope to the outside of the apron. Then Orndorff applies a figure four. Jack gets hit with the brace and falls off the apron back first onto the mat on the floor. And then Orton attacks the knee with a chair. over and over again, calls for a pile driver, but during this time, Jack grabs a shovel. Orndorff turns around and takes a shovel shot to the head, and Jack gets the win at 12 minutes and 18 seconds.
Oh, crowd pops big for the Foley.
This was a hell of a brawl.
A really good match, and, you know, we...
I would say three good matches so far on this show.
Yeah, sure. We might No, not that Bulldog one, I would...
Oh, sorry. I'm thinking of Benoit Scorpio in the opening tag match. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, I understand the criticism behind, you know, those stupid moves, but at the same time, they really do help make the match better, and that's probably all, you know, anybody was really thinking of at the time. So I really liked the match, but I was even more impressed with the way the psychology behind Orndorff working the leg and Foley selling the leg. That, to me, garnered just as big of a reaction as any of the crazy bumps that he took.
Bischoff is back with Bad and Hyatt. Hyatt says that Flair will make an appearance at Super Brawl tonight. Stunning news, considering we just saw him show up in a limo. We figure he's going to do something. And Johnny B. Bad starts breaking down our next match, which is Dustin Rhodes. Or sorry, later on tonight it'll be Rhodes and Payne. First up, we had the Rock and Roll Express against Tom Pritchard and Stan Lane. And Jim Cornette came out with Tom Pritchard, Stan Lane, and Bobby Eaton. And they were basically doing a gimmick here where two of the three would be wrestling. And this was at a time with Bill Watts in power. He had set up this working agreement with Jim Cornette's Smoky Mountain Wrestling. Guess who made their final appearance in WCW after this show? It would be the Smoky Mountain Wrestling representatives.
Really? Wow.
Yes. And in an interesting note, they billed Pritchard and Stan Lane as the Heavenly Bodies. Might be one of the only times that a match took place on a WCW and WWF pay-per-view in the same year.
This same match?
At the Survivor Series. It wasn't the exact same match, but it was the Rock and Roll Express against the Heavenly Bodies at Survivor Series later that year, but it was Tom Pritchard and Jimmy Del Rey with Jim Cornette. So kind of similar.
Wow.
So Bobby Eaton is sent to the back, and then the match begins. We saw Hurricane Rana by Ricky Morton to Pritchard. The Express comes in. They send the Bodies to the floor. Ventura says that with what the... this was when, I believe it was Stan Lane, goes to the floor and starts hugging Jim Cornette. And Ventura says, with what the president is about to do with the military, he could allow Cornette to be eligible, inciting that Cornette is a homosexual. And this was Bill Clinton enacting Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Wow, what a... You got him.
Ha-ha. There was a crisscross spot with Stan Lane and Morton, with Morton going to the floor, chasing Cornette into the ring as Lane continued running, and it led to Cornette bumping into Stan Lane in the ring. I love this spot. I thought it was very funny. Cornette then took a bump off the apron to the floor. Pritchard holds Morton and takes a tennis racket shot from Cornette. Then Lane gets the heat on Ricky Morton. Ventura asks what Tom Pritchard has a doctorate in, if he's called the doctor, Tom Pritchard, suggesting perhaps it's in gynecology. No. And Schiavone says, no, he's the doctor of disaster. He got his doctorate in disaster. These two were just like, ugh, this was something else. This is one pay-per-view to go back for the commentary for. It was quite the job by these two. Sit-out powerbomb by Pritchard, gets a two count. Then Morton hits a double DDT to both, and then finally makes the hot tag to Robert Gibson. Morton is sent to the floor. They double-team Gibson, but then Morton is back. They hit a double drop kick. Cornette is brought in, but then Pritchard hits a bulldog onto Gibson, and Cornette is distracting the official as Bobby Eaton runs back to the ring, climbs to the top, and goes to hit a knee off the top rope, but he misses Ricky Morton and instead hits teammate Tom Pritchard, and it allows Robert Gibson to cover Pritchard for the win at 12 minutes and 55 seconds, and it leads to Pritchard, Eaton, Lane, and Cornette all arguing after the match. And I believe this was their final WCW match, at least as a unit.
Okay. I thought this was, you know, about as fundamental as a tag match as you could get. But it was done really well, and it was a really hot crowd that reacted to it. So, yeah.
Yeah, they got into this. Schiavone and Ventura call this, says this show has been phenomenal so far, with Ventura says, I have never seen a card like this.
Wow.
All those WrestleManias, it's, no. Super Brawl 3.
Well, he probably means he hasn't seen these people wrestle in this match in this order.
Yes, that would be accurate.
At this date in time.
This was also at the time Jesse Ventura was the mayor of Brooklyn Park, Minnesota.
Right.
So, a busy man.
Yeah.
This would be like Rob Ford doing Elimination Chamber.
Rob Ford coaching a football team.
Yes.
That's what it'd be like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They discuss the issues of taking a late replacement and what this will cause Dustin Rhodes to have to adapt to. And that took us to our United States title match. Dustin Rhodes against Max Payne. Max Payne from the state of Euphoria.
Ooh.
That's where he's built from. Quite a great tourist spot, I hear.
Mm-hmm.
WCW rules here. No knees off the top to the throat.
Okay.
That's an interesting one. No knee to a down throat.
Yeah.
Terribly slow start to this match. Mm. Max Payne misses a splash in the corner, and Rhodes applies an arm drag. Rhodes then runs into a back elbow. The crowd didn't seem into this one at all. Payne attacked the left arm. Rhodes got a crucifix on the floor, but then Payne got out, hit a clothesline, and Ventura was clearly amused by the state of euphoria and asking all about this. And Payne misses an elbow drop. Then Rhodes with a jumping lariat that the crowd reacts to. There's a vertical suplex to Payne, gets a two count, and then Payne gets put into the dreaded abdominal stretch, and he grabs the referee, and the disqualification is called at 11 minutes and 28 seconds. Nothing worse than a pay-per-view that a match that goes more than 10 minutes and ends with a finish like this. This sucked. And then Payne attacked Rhodes after with a shoulder breaker, but then Rhodes made his comeback, sent Payne into the post, kept attacking him as the officials tried to break it up. So, boy, I was excited to see a rematch out of this.
No, not me. This sucked. This put me to sleep many times.
This is where the show turned a corner for me.
Yeah,
tough
it
match.
It was really slow, really boring, and I needed a nap after this.
You were at work.
Yep.
You took a nap.
Well, I needed one. I didn't take it.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, but I needed one. I think I need one now after even talking about it.
Oh, is this show boring you?
No.
Am I boring you?
No, you're very exciting.
Oh, thanks.
I mean remembering even this match.
Well, Bischoff, Bad, and Hyatt are back. Hyatt says she has a surprise for tonight. Then Gary Michael Capetta introduces one of the biggest sports personalities in the world today, Ric Flair, who is ushered out with security. This was like he was the president or something. Like, this was so hokey, I thought.
Ooh. Oh, come on. He's supposed to be a big deal.
This was too goofy for me. This was like, you know, they're coming out. They've got their shades on. They're listening to their earpieces. They're putting their hands around Flair. Like, come on.
You just watched a match with an evil guitarist. How would this be too hokey?
WCW was so weird at this time. Just so weird. Schiavone interviews him, basically just says he's back and he's here to watch the next match and he's going to join Jesse and Tony on commentary.
Oh, boy.
And Ventura and Flair note this is the first time they've ever been in the same company together. They've always missed each other by a few years. Mm-hmm. But here they are in WCW together and they're going to call the NWA title match the Great Muta defending the title against Barry Windham. And when I saw this match was on this card, I was like, this is going to be excellent. That's not the word I would use to describe this.
How were the NWA and WC titles differentiated at this time?
This was a very confusing time where it was in 1988 that basically the ownership was shifted over to Turner from Crockett, and they were in the process of basically rebranding it from the NWA to WCW, and they were still using the NWA title, but then they also had this World Heavyweight title, which would eventually they would basically combine it to be the WCW title. But at this point, it was much like we have in WWE. We had two world titles, but we didn't have separate rosters. It was just very odd time.
Well, I'm trying to figure out which one was the higher ranked title, because here they said
that they presented the world like Vader was like
was
the guy. Yeah.
They were saying here that whoever wins this title would go on to challenge Vader.
Yeah, I think they were in the process of
but then Flair says that this was the title that he never lost. So was Flair holding the secondary title before he left?
Flair was holding, like, you know, what was the big gold belt?
Which is what this was. The NWA title.
Yes. This was identified as the NWA title, and then they introduced the world title that was Vader's.
Okay.
Sometime after Flair had left.
All right. Whatever.
Great Muda had Hiro Matsuda in his corner. And they talk about how he won.
Muda is the champion.
Yes, Muda's the champion. He won it from Masahiro Chono at the Tokyo Dome that year, the prior month. And Flair is breaking down both men. And he says that he's picking Wyndham to win, but he said, let's not forget, all those Japs are tough.
No.
All those Japs.
Well, it's a compliment.
They're all tough.
Yeah.
I remember Flair, like, it was like a Raw in, like, 2004, where he called Tajiri a Jap. And it was just like...
Listen, North Carolina, however old this guy is, you, there's no malice behind it.
Yeah.
It's just...
Once you're a certain age, it's
you're allowed to say all that.
It's just like a...
Oh, how
crazy old man.
How cute.
Actually, interesting enough, we're recording this on Ric Flair's birthday.
Oh, okay.
He's 64.
Great.
64, meaning he was 44. Would have been 43 time. When this event took place. Oh, this was February 21st, so this would have been 4 days before his birthday.
That's quite amazing when you think about it.
Yeah.
Because, like, a lot of people would still consider this to be his prime.
Yeah.
You know, 43.
I would say he was still a really solid performer until, I would say, 97. He had that big shoulder injury, and I think he kind of, I think that was the end of him being, you know, a full-time, you know, week-to-week performer.
How old is Taker right now?
Oh, Taker is like 46, I want to say.
Okay, about that same age.
Yeah.
But Flair was still going strong.
Flair's, I think, in much better shape, though, than Taker at this point.
Yeah.
I would guess. Anyway, match continues. There was a wear down by Muda. We should note, I was going back to read a report on this show, and apparently Muda had the flu during this match, and it rendered him rather useless in this match. Huh? Did you call him Fluta? Even I wouldn't have used that one.
I'm sorry.
There's not a lot to say about this match. It was really, really long.
Well, that's sort of the style that I think was rampant throughout this show.
I thought this was a giant disappointment.
A lot of slow wrestling.
I'm a huge Barry Windham fan, so I had very high hopes for this match.
Yeah.
It was a lot of headlocks and rest spots.
It was almost like they were told, hey, you have this much time, you have 30 minutes, and they almost didn't know what to do with all that time.
At about the, like, three-hour mark of this match, Ventura notes, there's still 40 minutes left until the time limit. I was like, oh my God. Wyndham blocked a sunset flip at one point. Muda countered a pile driver with a back body drop. There was actually a spinning Liger kick by Muda, which was maybe the high spot of the match, to the gut of Wyndham, who popped right back up. Wyndham went for a superplex, but Muda fought him off. We saw two moonsault attempts by Muda in this. He missed the first one and then went for another one, and Wyndham got his knees up, hit his lariat and DDT to pin him at 24 minutes and 26 seconds. I thought this was... I would say a pretty big disappointment of a match. Pretty weak. I would say at least the Davey Boy Smith match, it was pretty short. I'm not going to compare the two. This, to me, was more of a letdown.
No, I could see that.
Because I had really high hopes for this. This could have been like a match of the year. I think if both guys were really on for this match.
And healthy.
Yeah.
In
Fluta.
I will say, I found the babyface heel dynamic really odd here, because Barry Windham was supposed to be the heel.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Great Muda was supposed to be the babyface, yet the crowd clearly wasn't on his side. This guy, you know, being a foreigner.
Do you think that played into it?
I don't know. I think it's mainly, it was because Ric Flair was there, and he was the top babyface in this match. We want Flair chance at the beginning of this match, and it didn't seem like the crowd was on either man's side. In fact, they were cheering for Wyndham to win by the end.
Yeah. Flair then put the title on Wyndham, and Wyndham was all surprised here, as Flair then just walked off, teasing the start of that program, which would lead to the two facing off at Beach Blast later that year for the NWA title. You want to review that one?
Give me a year. Maybe next year.
Yeah. We got to space out these early 90s WCW ones. They were...
They take a lot of out of me.
You know what I want to... What I wanted out of this event was on the weekend, when I was finding a clip for Kevin Sullivan, and I watched the entire... the debut of the Giant as part of the Dungeon of Doom.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. It's so great.
I wish we could just review those vignettes.
Yeah, maybe that's what we should do.
They should make a DVD of
the best of the Dungeon of Doom.
Yeah.
Everything of the Dungeon of Doom. Okay. A very underrated group.
Oh, man. Yeah, the Yeti, the What other? What else?
The Yeti. Oh my God! Oh, you know what we should review in March is Uncensored 96, which featured, it was like 8-on-2, Hogan and Savage against like 8 members.
Wow.
Of like every stupid gimmick imaginable.
Nice.
A terrible, terrible main event. All right. So then Bischoff, Hyatt, and Bad preview the White Castle of Fear, noting that Big Van Vader is big.
Yep, thank you.
And calls it very scary. Now, at this point, Wei and I are going to watch the White Castle of Fear. Ooh. Because
the vignette.
The vignette, of course. And
a shame that it was left out of this show.
Yeah, very, very silly. You put all that money into this. This was like literally about $80,000 they spent on this fucking thing.
Oh, God.
This was, you know, when you have TBS television people involved, you get stupid stuff like this. So,
what, every...
I'm all for it, though. I'm glad shit like this exists. Like,
oh, I'm glad they wasted all that money. So for our...
we gotta watch an advertisement. Hey!
Oh, you could skip that.
How? You just go X?
Yeah.
Fuck, man. Those York University ads.
I haven't
that play every 5 seconds?
I've never seen them.
Okay. Let's find it. Here.
Sting accepted an invitation to a party at the White House in the Rocky Mountains.
The helicopter alone.
Party.
Yeah, we're going for a party. He's not going to a party. He's being abducted. Look at this.
What are they, in the Arctic? This match is taking
place. This is where Vader resides.
Where are we going?
I wonder if you can hear this. Oh. You haven't seen this.
No, I have not.
He can hear him.
Yeah, how is he? Is he?
I know you like it. It's good time. I know you like challenges. Could this be some sort of trap?
Yes, Sting, it's a trap.
No, it's just...
Who's flying this helicopter?
Life living on the edge! Well, I guess I'll find out soon enough.
Look at this.
A scroll. Where did he get that scroll from?
Or that paper.
Yeah.
Oh, I love 1993.
I don't know how much I can watch of this.
Oh, come on, come on.
This is fucking brutal.
We're not even there yet. You've got to see the White Castle of Fear contents.
What does this have to do with a leather strap?
You're going
to
see. This tells a whole story. It's only like 3 more minutes.
We're in the castle.
That's Vader's headpiece. And his whores.
What?
Oh, it's loading. Shit.
Oh, man.
Oh, this is what I talk about, these ads.
Okay. Oh, these fucking... Well, that was nice.
You're not,
Let's... Okay. I just... an apple.
Look at this.
This doesn't look like a party.
This music, though, is incredible. Like, just think, how are we going to sell a pay-per-view? And this was what they came up with.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck, this looks like Baby Blue. Late night on, like, City TV.
Oh, this looks just like a porno.
Harley race. That's Cheatham. That shot of that guy Cheatham saying play the game.
Yeah.
Watch how many times they use that same shot over and over again.
Oh,
just in different spots. Whoa.
Models.
Fuck. Where's Shannon Tweed? One-eyed midget.
Oh my God.
What's up? Your hair could accept the challenge of Vader. Are you ready to play the game? Alright, alright. So what's the game?
See, watch how they're gonna set this up, way. This would have been way better if there were flames in the match. Yeah.
What is the point of this? You just hold on to the strap, just wait till it burns?
Watch what's going to happen, though. This is going to be the big dramatic cliffhanger. As they're literally probably on a cliff. Somewhere in the mountains. Oh no, Sting! What's gonna happen?
Explosion. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Now, are you ready for this main event?
That sucked.
Oh, you weren't a... I loved it. I thought it was awesome.
I like the gay sex version better that I saw.
So that was the setup, folks. That's how WCW sold pay-per-view main events in 1993. And that wasn't their only one. There was one on the beach once where
Those are
boat
classic.
Exploded.
Yep.
Some high-end production.
Unbelievable waste of money.
So we got Vader and Sting, a lights-out leather strap match for the World Heavyweight title.
So I'm supposed to believe that Vader lives up in a castle? The Harley Race lives up in... They live up in this...
Yeah, that's their
mountain.
Lair. It's where they prepare.
All right.
So Harley Race is in the corner of Vader. The same guy you watched in St. Louis and Kansas City. Harley Race in the White Castle of Fear vignettes.
Decided to move up into the mountain.
Oh, this match non-sanctioned by WCW despite a championship on the line and a WCW official assigned to the match. Vader gets the early advantage, hits a splash off the second turnbuckle. Sting fires back with punches. Say what you will about the build-up here. This crowd was so into Sting. I mean, this guy was a huge babyface.
And I think Vader was always a really great character.
I loved Vader during this time period. Yeah. Such a great heel. They go to the floor after Sting starts going for the turnbuckles and gets sent into the barricade. Sting blocks a powerbomb, hitting a back body drop. And then Sting misses a top rope splash, and Vader's back here gets cut somewhere. Vader misses a Vader bomb off the ropes, then he climbs to the top, gets crotched by Sting, who yanks the strap. And Vader gets the advantage, touches three of the turnbuckles, but Sting wraps his legs around the bottom rope and hits an upkick to stop Vader.
My favorite part of this match was when Vader is whipping Sting, and then Jesse says... Tony, this reminds me of when your children misbehave.
Oh, Jesus. Yes, I beat my kids.
I can't believe this man became governor.
This man was a mayor at the time. Sting comes out of the corner with a rolling capo kick. Shades of Loki. And then hit a German suplex to Vader. That looked impressive. Then hit a DDT and a series of shots in the corner. Vader's mask falls off. And then Sting deadlifts him onto his shoulders, touches three of the turnbuckles, but Vader's leg kicks the referee out as he's on top of Sting's shoulders, and then Sting trips over the referee, missing the final turnbuckle, and then Vader hits a bonsai drop off the bottom rope, ties Sting's legs up, and drags him. Sting holds onto the rope to avoid the final turnbuckle being touched, and then Harley Race is trying to break his Sting's hands off of the ropes, and then Sting kicks Vader, who stumbles into the fourth turnbuckle, winning the match at 20 minutes and 54 seconds. And then Sting attacks Vader after the match with the strap, and Vader keeping the WCW World Heavyweight title.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they always had pretty good chemistry, even at a time when Sting, you know, wasn't the greatest in-ring talent, but sure, these two had some very good chemistry together.
Yeah, they managed to get a good finish by the end, but I'm not a fan of these strap matches at all. I don't think that the drama's ever really that high in them, so I can't say I like this.
Well, that was the match, and then Bischoff, Johnny B. Badd, and Missy Hyatt, they discuss all the Super Brawl parties going on all around in the area, mm-hmm, in Asheville, all the fighter post-fight parties.
Yep.
Okay. Exciting. And then Perry Windham walks in with the NWA title, says he is going after all the titles in the company.
Yeah.
This title is not enough.
Nope.
And then Shivani and Ventura... Shivani says, like, he's all excited, like, what a night we've had. And Jesse just says, I'm not going to lie, my voice is dying, I'm really tired. And Shivani says, well, what a main event, Vader retaining the World Heavyweight title. Absolutely, Vader wins the strap match. And that was it. Jesse Ventura just completely just fucking giving nothing here to Tony Schiavone.
Yeah. Yep.
These two are horrendous, I thought, together.
Okay.
And that was the end of Super Brawl 3. What an event.
Yeah.
Man, you made it through, Way. I'm impressed.
Barely. But I wasn't a big fan of this show.
I thought that there were at least some very good matches on this show. I can't say a bad show. I gave this one 6.5 out of 10. I thought overall, outside of Windham and Muda, I didn't complain too much about the in-ring.
Yeah, I guess so. I suppose it was okay, but I was never a huge fan of many of these styles, I guess. I don't know. I give this a 4. I don't
know. 4. Mr. Ting, not giving a passing grade to Super Brawl, but those are our thoughts on Super Brawl 3. And now we'll head on over to the feedback and see what you guys had to say. Chris in Ottawa writes, so thrilled to finally catch this show. Growing up in Canada, my first exposure to WCW was the Power Hour on Saturday mornings on TSN. Suddenly, there was this alternate wrestling reality out there where Terry Taylor wasn't the Red Rooster, Big Van Vader wore this crazy mask and seemed to really hurt his opponents rather badly, and Chris Benoit and Jushin Thunder Liger were having matches in Japan like nothing I'd ever seen before. Included in this alternate reality were pay-per-views I'd never heard of before. War Games? Two Rings and a Cage? Starcade? Why does it have two R's? Do they stand for the two rings at War Games? And of course, the illustrious White Castle of Fear at Super Brawl. And what better way to kick off a pay-per-view and kill a hot crowd than with Eric Bischoff and Missy Hyatt discussing the card while piped into the arena? I guess we all should have guessed that this show would have been cursed from that point on. Has there ever been a greater mismatch of talent in a tag match than Austin and Pillman against Bagwell and Eric Watts? Watching this as a kid, though, WCW had convinced this impressionable youngster that all of these guys were great, and I liked Austin's haircut so much I got one for myself. So they had Max Payne jam out on a guitar for the national anthem, which for my money is the most babyface thing ever, and then cut a heel promo 20 minutes later. Meanwhile, Mark Merrill was an effeminate babyface in the American South in 93. There was some good on the show in spite of itself. Cactus Jack and 43-year-old Paul Orndorff had one hell of a match. Thankfully, and I've always loved the great Muda and the verve and panache his character and ring work had.
Lee Russell, the Hollywood Blondes were a couple of weeks from getting the tag titles and pulled something watchable out of a very green Bagwell and an always awful Watts. Benoit vs. Scorpio was great. The Bulldog's WCW debut was a by-the-numbers Bulldog squash. He was never really anything in WCW. The Cactus vs. Orndorff match was a sort of a clash of styles. Orndorff kept trying to actually wrestle and looked lost in the brawling portions of the match, but it was still pretty decent overall. The original Heavenly Bodies vs. Rock and Roll Express was great. If you like the Smoky Mountain wrestling style, it was a nice little change-up from the WCW tag style jammed into the middle of the card here. Did anyone watch Max Payne versus Dustin Rhodes? Look at all the empty seats all of a sudden. This was sort of the equivalent of today's Divas bathroom break. Probably a good reason. Then we get the first main event as Muta defends against Wyndham in his mostly forgotten NWA title reign. Probably a good reason for that, as he got pretty lazy in this WCW stint. Just check out the agonizing rest holds and sloppy work in this match. Boring stuff. The only thing of interest was the stuff with Flair after Wyndham won. Now, despite the so bad it's good White Castle of Fear shit, the Sting versus Vader match was really good stuff. Vader, like Flair, was one of those guys that could always pull something watchable out of Sting, who was never a great worker. Vader has always been my favorite monster heel, and this was pretty much his peak period in North America. WCW was sadly on a downward spiral at this point, but this was still a pretty good show, all things considered, 7 out of 10.
We head on over to Paul Delos. So let me get this straight. We're reviewing a card with a main event that has a convoluted name, White Castle of Fear. I'm craving some delicious sliders, and I have nothing to fear about them, considering I was 6 years old when this show came on, and I only remember pre-NWO WCW as the TBS Super Show. So I was able to review this card with fresh eyes and no preconceived notions. With the exception of the British Bulldog squash, I enjoyed the first half of the card. The Hollywood Blondes were great. I was reminded of Too Cold Scorpio's talent, and Cactus Jack and Paul Orndorff had a fun little brawl. The Heavenly Body and Rock and Roll Express bout was good, but it kind of marked the beginning of the card's downfall. The Dustin Rhodes Max Payne match was forgettable, with an ending that did nothing for me. In fact, I don't remember any of the spots in the bout, so if there was anything I missed, please tell me again. I was nearly put to sleep by the Muta Wyndham match. Truly felt as if the two sides couldn't figure out how to work the match and decided the two painfully long rest holds with Muta hitting his trademark spots minus missed attack before losing was the way to go. I loved the great Muta, but it seemed like he got stuck in the vortex of suck with a worker I feel is slightly overrated. Not even Rick Flair's presence could have saved that cluster. The main event was what you would expect from a strap match with an ending I wasn't going to be too mad about. My only gripe with the bout was for someone booked as a monster, Vader surely took a lot of damage. I could also do without the constant cuts to Johnny B. Badd, Eric Bischoff, and Missy Hyatt. It hurt the flow of the card, and I found them all to be equally annoying. Overall, this wasn't a terrible pay-per-view for pre-NWO WCW. I rate it 7 out of 10 busy signals on the WCW hotline.
Our next reviewer says, I was ecstatic when I heard you guys plan to review this show. The White Castle of Fear is so indicative of the type of wrestle crap that WCW was producing at this time, and rewatching it, especially the vignettes with Sting and the copter, which was hilariously cringeworthy. However, this was still not as bad as the Spin the Wheel Make a Deal segments the prior October. From an in-ring point of view, it was a reasonable card with a great main event, a fun match between Wyndham and Muta, and of course the much maligned obligatory review away appearance from one Chris Benoit, although not as unwelcome as an Eric Watts match. Overall, I give this show 6 out of 10.
Trent from Texas writes, throughout this broadcast, you could tell that Jesse and Schiavone genuinely did not get along with this, and it was no act. It made for some very awkward moments, and I feel it was all Jesse's fault because he was flat out being an ass, while Tony was trying to be diplomatic. Heenan was the same way with him, and it was no fault of Schiavone's either. It was great to see the original smart mark, cool heel tag team, the Hollywood Blondes. I don't think I've ever seen a match with them before, and they were as good as advertised. I always gave Eric Watts the benefit of the doubt because he was put in a no-win situation. Debuting as a babyface is almost always a bad idea unless you are a high flyer with cool moves, especially if you are the boss's son. But this guy was horrible. He had a bad look, no charisma, and was mediocre at best in the ring. He looked very out of place in the ring with the other three in the match. On a side note, Watts and Bagwell came out to the American Males theme on the Classics on Demand version I watched. Despite having one of the worst looks I've ever seen in pro wrestling, the Rock and Roll Express were amazing and never failed to get a crowd to go crazy throughout their match. This match was them at their best. After getting fired for looking too roided up a couple of months earlier, Bulldog debuted looking as juiced up as ever. Just from looking at him, he looked too stocky to even move his arms above his head, despite the fact he could still go in the ring with the best of them. I'm not sure if that is admirable or not. The Max Payne character was very cool and original. The look and the clothes he wore to the ring made him look like a star, but when he took them off to wrestle in his generic jobber wrestling singlet, it killed the entire gimmick and aura. I'm not sure if he eventually changed what he wore to wrestle in, but he needed to ditch that horrible singlet badly. And finally, the Foley-Orndorff match was a nice surprise and somewhat of a pseudo-dream match. To my amazement, a 44-year-old Orndorff hung with Foley and wrestled a wild, hardcore brawl and never looked out of place, and he gives a 7 out of 10.
Finally, from Nate Milton from Cambridge.
From Cambridge!
Brother Pollock and Brother Tang, I was glad to hear that you had selected Super Brawl 3 as this week's review. Early 90s WCW always makes for a fun show. My only regret is that it's not being released on Tuesday, since it would give me something entertaining to listen to on my four-hour trip from Norfolk to Toronto. 1993 was an interesting time in WCW history. While you still had that foundation of traditional NWA-style wrestling, you also started to see some of the more cartoony, almost WWF-style elements that would actually get kicked into overdrive when Hogan would arrive the following year. The prime example of this would be the White Castle of Fear vignette. While it is cheesy, it does star Sting, Vader, Harley Race, and a midget, and some strippers. That alone makes it more entertaining than a lot of today's wrestling programs. In terms of in-ring action, this card had a little bit of everything. Some technical wrestling, some hardcore matches, classic Southern-style tag team matches, some really good big man matches, and even some cruiserweight style action thrown in for good measure. My favorite undercard matches would have to be the Muda versus past his prime Barry Windham, and the showcase match featuring the always underrated and underpushed Too Cold Scorpio. Looking back, is it safe to say that he was the Shelton Benjamin of his era? Finally, the main event was solid, but also a bit underwhelming. I'm a huge fan of the Sting-Big Van Vader feud, but I've never really liked strap matches. That being said, I always loved the contrast between these two workers, and after Flair and Muda, I think Vader is probably Sting's greatest opponent. All in all, this was a fun show that I gave 7 Johnny B. Bad staring down the front of Missy Hyatt's cocktail dresses out of 10. And since this is the last review away of Black History Month, might I suggest going out with Too Cold Scorpio's WCW theme music, which informs us, among other things, that Scorpio is like the United States during the Gulf War because he attacks from the air. Anyways, keep up the good work, gentlemen, and I'll see you on the other side of the border.
All right. Well, thank you, Nate. That wraps up our review of WCW Super Brawl 3, an event that I can't guarantee Wei will ever watch again in his entire lifetime, but one that at least you can say, yeah, I've seen that. I remember that.
Yeah.
Vader and Sting.
I'm not going to remember it, but yeah.
Well, that brings us to a close, and Wei, I felt guilty. I put you through such a long event this week.
No,
so
don't.
This is your opportunity now to pick anything you would like for us to review next week on the show.
Well, this is, of course, March coming up, and March is what we on the show like to call WrestleMania month. So let's do what we did last year. We'll, on our way towards, well,
we should
let's do this.
Last year for WrestleMania, we did the final Raw before WrestleMania and then reviewed the WrestleMania.
That's right. So since you'll have the week after, you'll have to pick the week afterwards, is there a WrestleMania that you had in mind?
No, I hadn't given it much thought. So it's you can pick both if you'd like. Just pick a year, and we'll do the Raw next week and then a WrestleMania.
I go to the request thread right now and look at all the WrestleManias that people have suggested, and let's see. I can't believe we haven't done WrestleMania 12 yet. But aside from that, WrestleMania 6 we haven't done. 15. 21.
You want to do 15? Because that has a Raw with it, whereas, 6 does not.
Right, okay. Let's do that. WrestleMania 15.
Okay, we'll do that. The Raw, I remember that Raw going in because it was one of the most hotly debated discussions. It was Big Show's, one of his first matches, at least in the WWF, and they beat him. And people were just, could not believe that they beat the Big Show just over a month into his WWF run. And that Raw also featured the infamous beer truck.
Right.
With Austin.
Oh,
so
excellent.
We can go back from March of 99 to review that Raw next week. And then 2 weeks then, we'll do WrestleMania 15. Bart Gunn Butterbean.
Yes.
And some other stuff on that WrestleMania.
Nice.
All right. That's going to wrap it up, folks. So thanks for tuning in. In the meantime, you can always go join the Law message board to get your feedback in and chat and fact check and get angry, get happy.
Mm-hmm.
We welcome all emotions on the Law message board.
Smite, and, exalt.
Oh, it's a huge, it's our lair where we go. It's
our
white and our black and yellow castle of fear.
Okay, yeah.
Terrible. All right, that's going to wrap it up. You can go grab the Law from this past weekend featuring the Taskmaster, Kevin Sullivan. Review a Raw from Monday night, what a Raw it was in Dallas, Texas, featuring some notable returns.
Yeah, I'd say so.
And we are going to be back later this week, not only review an Impact, which will be Nate Milton's first Canadian appearance as a newly minted Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
He will be with us.
He's not technically not Canadian.
No, he's technically not, but he has moved from Canadian soil, he will join us.
Yes.
And then coming up this weekend, we have got Kofi Kingston will be on the Law.
Wow.
So there you go.
Are you announcing that for the first time here?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Kofi Kingston will be on the Law this Sunday night. And Wei, you will also be hanging out with Brodus Clay, I believe, later this week.
Yes, I will.
Wow, that's going to be exciting.
Brodus Clay, me and Brodus, and you won't be there.
But no, I won't be there for Brodus.
No, but you'll be there
But you can report back to us and tell us how it goes.
Sure, well, sure, I'll do that.
All right. That's going to wrap it up, folks. Thanks for listening. You can follow Wei at Wei0937 on Twitter, at Law Radio. Go to liveaudiowrestling.com, and you can subscribe to all of our shows by subscribing to Live Audio Wrestling on iTunes. And we will chat with you later on this week. Going out with a Two Cold Scorpios theme. Does that sound good?
Yeah, it sounds good to me.
All right, let's...
In honor of Black History.
Yes. Well,
as Nate Milton says.
What a great way to close out the month.
Yeah.
And what an event this was, Jesse. Had a little bit of everything for our wrestling fans.
Tony Schiavone, I barely got any voice left. I'm tired, if you can believe that.
Jesse, the body has no voice left. Give me a break. But I tell you what, it was a tremendous battle with Sting and Big Van Vader. Sting almost had him. Harley Race got the hand in, and we had a big night, Jesse.
Absolutely. Vader wins the strap match.
Thanks for joining us. Thank you, Asheville. We'll see you next time.